Again, great to see everyone. And we are now continuing on with Sefer Shoftim. We are in the first chapter. Just to recap, what we've been learning is that we first, you know, discuss the overview and the context and the history where we find ourselves in the beginning of Sefer Shoftim. And Sefer Shoftim really begins, it's funny, not with the Shoftim, but it begins with, you know, adding to the, or extending some of the wars and conquests that Yehoshua did not do. And that's where we find ourselves now. So there are certain cities that were not taken over yet by the Jewish people, certain cities that will not for much longer, maybe they wait till the time of David HaMelech, that will not be taken over till then. And they inquired of the Urim and Tumim, and they said, who should be the one that's leading us right now? Which is the tribe or the person from which tribe that should be leading us? And the Urim v'Tumim answered, Yehuda Ya'ale. It should be Yehuda. So they took that right now to mean that Shevet Yehuda should be the one taking the lead in the further conquest of Klal Yisrael. And again, that goes as a direct result of the psukim at the end of Parshas Vayechi. Lo yasser Shevet Yehuda. The Torah says very clearly that the mantle of leadership comes straight from Shevet Yehuda. The Ramban on that pasuk notes that it's Chanukah time. How could it be that the Chashmonaim took over the mantle of leadership? It was one thing that in the times of the Yevanim, we needed the Chashmonaim to fight the war. Maybe there was nobody else to do that. But the Ramban speaks, you know, some Rishonim speak disparagingly about the Chashmonaim in that after this war was over with the Assyrian Greeks, the Chashmonaim took leadership. They should have given it back to the Shevet Yehuda, to the leader. Yes, Ramban and Rambam, Maimonides and Nachmanides, whether they acted appropriately by taking and continuing on with the leadership. Ultimately, the Hasmonean or the Chashmonaim destiny or, you know, history is fraught with a lot of politics, a lot of backstabbing, a lot of revenge. There's a lot of, in fact, the Gemara says to the extent that if somebody ever states that I am of Chashmonaitic descent, they are not telling the truth. All the Chashmonaim eventually, through generations, were all killed out. They all died out. It's a lot to talk about in that portion of history. But I just wanted to, once we're talking about Lo Yasser Shevet Yehuda, and it is Chanukah this week, rumor has it, or Hashem, pandemic or no pandemic, we are celebrating Chanukah together this year, Bezrat Hashem. So that is Shevet Yehuda. So Shevet Yehuda says, I'm not going to do this alone. I'm going to ask Shimon Achi. I'm going to ask Shimon, my brother, my Shevet, to join me, the Shevet Shimon, to join me in these further conquests. The Malbim, I think, I don't think we mentioned this last time. This is a great point. The Malbim says that if you look back at Shevet Shimon is never given any real brachos, both in Parshas Vayichi and Zosa Bracha. They're stuffed to the side. Shimon in last week's Parsha and Vayishlach, along with their brother Levi, act, you know, very strongly or very vengeful against against Shechem. They murder out the entire city, and ultimately,
do we know why he chose Shimon?
Yeah, that's what I'm explaining right now. Shimon doesn't receive a bracha from Yaakov, nor from Moshe Rabbeinu in Zosa Bracha. And the land that Shimon has, every other Shevet has contiguous land. We're overlooking Levi right now because of the nature of the Levium. But every other Shevet has contiguous, has a set block of land in Eretz Yisrael. The only Shevet that does not have land like that, and they have, it's more like blotchy in different parts and different areas, is Shevet Shimon. Because the language by Shimon is va'afitim b'Yisrael, that they should be spread out. because if they're all together, they're too hot-headed, they're too much of zealots, and too much zealotry is unhealthy. It's dangerous. They could brew up together. So once now, right, the setting of Sefer Shoftim is that we finished the conquest, we gave out the land. Shimon is feeling Nebuch. It's not fair. Look what we got. Look what everybody else got, and look at us. We're all over the place. It's not right. So Yehuda wanted to make them feel better. The Malbim says, out of an act of solidarity to their brother, Shimon said, you come with me. That's what Pasuk Gimel says right here. Vayomer Yehuda l'Shimon Achiv. Stresses that language here. Yehuda says to Shimon, my brother, Aleiti begorali v'nilchama b'kanani. Come with me, and let's fight against the Kananim. V'halachti gamani itcha begoralacha, v'yelech ito Shimon. And come up with me, and let's fight together. So you see that this was something significant in their acting this way. And that's real leadership, right? You want to take the mantle leadership. It doesn't mean you just, okay, I get to be the head. No, that means you are inclusive. You add people in, especially the people on the periphery. That is the role of Yehuda as a leader, or the role of any leader in particular, is to dafka, be careful about those that are on the outsiders, and to care and have care and concern for them as well.
Or Rabbi.
Yes.
Yeah, so over Shabbos, honey and I took out a map of the Shvatim, and at least what we saw was that Shimon's land was encircled by Yehuda.
Yeah.
It was actually all around. They were like their neighbors also. And yeah, maybe just also to keep things good between neighbors, this is a nice gesture.
This is a nice gesture as neighbors. Yeah, I think that's a very important point too. I think one of the, I can't speak about how it is Stu in Israel, but my feeling is it was the same, that you felt more like how important it was to be a neighbor during Corona. You know, like those are sometimes the only people you saw for, you know, weeks at a time. And, you know, in this day and age where like we're running and moving and going from place to place, like that notion of being a Shachin Tov became extra significant, extra important here. I think the same thing is true. Rumor has it, Danny and Jules and Tinek also. I assume it's the same. Okay, let's continue over here. Vayal Yehuda. So what were they going now? We're going to talk about some of their brief battles. We'll highlight the first one because it's very significant. Vayal Yehuda v'itein Hashem es kanani v'aprizi b'yadam v'yakum bebezek aseres alafim ish. Right? So they went, Yehuda advanced, and the Hashem, you know, put into their hands the Kananim, the Prizim, and they defeated 10,000 of them at a place called Bezek. Right? What do we know Bezek as? Stu, what's Bezek in Israel? If I said the word Bezek, what would I... Is that the phone company? You're on mute. I believe that's okay.
Communications giant, the phone company.
It's the phone company, internet. Right? Phone company, internet.
For everything.
Yeah, it's everything. So this is the first time the word Bezek comes up in Tanakh, and it is not in a positive way. So I guess that depends on your relationship to the bureaucratic system in Israel, the phone companies and the internet connection. Vayimsu es Adoni Bezek. So the first, I would say, enemy that we find in Sefer Shoftim is Adoni Bezek. Vayimsu es Adoni Bezek, bebezek, vayilachemu bo. They found Adoni Bezek in Bezek. That's where they were fighting. That's where the battle was. Vayaku es Kanani v'Aseprizi. So they engaged in battle, right? They encountered Adoni Bezek here. While they encountered him, they were fighting other people. So Adoni Bezek was sort of like on the periphery when they were attacking their main enemies. Their main enemies were the Kananim and the Prizim. Those two nations are prominent, play a prominent role in the Torah. The Torah talks about numerous times that Hashem is going to remove, or it's going to be our job to remove the seven Canaanite nations from Eretz Yisrael. Prizi and Kanani are on those lists. So now what happens? Now they start fighting against Adoni Bezek. Vayanas Adoni Bezek. Adoni Bezek runs away. Vayirdefu acharav. Vayelchzu oso. They chase after him and they get him. They capture him. But they don't just capture him. They do something pretty horrific, which we would say today would violate the Geneva Convention. What do they do to him? Vayikotitsu es behonos yadav viraglav. Bohen generally means, the bohen yadav viraglav refers to one's thumb or big toe. They cut off Adoni Bezek's thumbs and big toes when they found him and captured him. Vayomer Adoni Bezek. Adoni Bezek used to state, not he said at this moment, but he used to state, Shivim Malachim Bahonos Yadeim Veraglenim Mekatzitzim Hayu. Adoni Bezek would show off and be very proud of the fact that Adoni Bezek would attack foreign nations. And when he would overcome those nations, it wouldn't be enough. So what would Adoni Bezek do to his people, to the people that he captures? He would cut off their behonos yadav viraglav. He would cut off their big toes and their thumbs. And, you know, especially in the days of texting, you realize how important your thumbs are. But even before the days of texting, thumbs are very, very significant for basic function. You want to carry something, you want to hold something, you need your thumb. There's like, you know, there's almost no way around it. I had a cut on my thumb. I was doing crafts with my kids. I had a cut on my thumb the other day, and it made things just that much harder to do. You know, buttoning your buttons. How do you button a button without a thumb? Try it. Try it later. It's really not easy. You need two hands. You need one. It's not easy. So what did he, to show his power and his might over his captives, he cut off their thumbs and their toes, their big toes. And then what would he do? He would make them, maybe he would chain them to their, you know, to the legs of his table, his dining room table, and they would eat food off of the floor. They would grab food underneath my table. Kasher asisi kain shilem li alukim vayivieu yushalayim v'yamashan. So he's reflecting now that Yehuda, who attacked him, and Shimon did the same thing. So they're doing it, and he says, what does he say now? It's a great line. Hashem did this to me. He realizes either that HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world, Mida Keneged Mida, or he's saying this is the God, right, of the Jewish people. That's who did this to me, who's cutting off my thumbs and big toes, and that's Mida Keneged Mida. Right, so let's just analyze this. For any questions here, we're learning together. Any questions on this this little episode? So is this still appropriate to do? You know, would we say today that Israel captures a terrorist, so we're going to go ahead and, you know, treat the terrorist like that terrorist treated his victims? Is that what the Navi's telling us here? That that's an appropriate thing to do? That it's our job to act, Mida Keneged Mida?
It's our role?
Yeah.
Rabbi, is Mida Keneged Mida a God thing, or also a man I should act, be acting that same way. I thought that was something that Hashem takes care of. That man correct. Doesn't. That man doesn't take a look and say, "Oh, you're doing this, so I'm going to do this to you to teach you a lesson." I thought God is the one that teaches lessons.
100%. Truth is, we're in the stories of Yosef. So,
I think
that it's really nice. One of the things I love getting.
I think
Rabbi Lapp, what'd you say?
I was.
Wait, Rabbi Lapp, you muted. Okay, we'll get back to Rabbi Lapp in a moment. But a young boy in the community sent me a video question over WhatsApp. He's learning with his father the stories of Yosef. And he said, how can Yosef act in such a harsh way to his brothers? No, that's all. That's Parshas Miketz. Vayidaber itam kashos. So the Rav Hirsch writes there is that Yosef was trying to actualize and create a situation of tshuva and put them back in the same situation that they were in beforehand to create tshuva gemura for his brothers, to recreate sort of the scene of the pit in Vayeshev. So that's my pushback against Mendy, but I in general, Yosef's the exception to that. That's not so simple that would be appropriate to do. By, you know, general, yes, it's only HaKadosh Baruch Hu that is acting Mida Keneged Mida. So then that further advances our question, why would these people, why would Yehuda and Shimon be allowed to do this to Adoni Bezek? Yeah. So the Al-Shif
first... does this enter into the larger... Does this enter the larger question of whether it's possible that morals or ethics changes over time? What was okay in biblical times today, and we're viewing it, and we wouldn't do it today? Was that
that's a good point.
Change?
So do things change? Does morals and ethics change based on the time and space that we're in? So how would the Torah interpret this? So we'll see a Ralbag in a moment.
It may have been okay for Abraham to shech his son Yitzchak. Today we look at it as there's no meaning for it. 100%.
So yeah, to add to that, you know, to marry two wives was something that the Torah is okay with. And back then it seemed like something that, you know, was normal. Today it's not something we consider it barbaric, inappropriate, wrong. So that's a very fair question to ask. We will discuss the notion of taking revenge on terrorists later on. There's an important episode in the story of Shimshon, and actually a law that is enacted, that it has been enacted in Israel, and they connect it to a story in Sefer Shoftim about Shimshon. That's very, very important because they destroyed the houses of terrorists because they want to discourage people from doing that again. That's to counteract the government who gives terrorists money, not the American, not the Israel government, but Iran, whoever it is, gives them a lot of money. So that, the Alsha points out over here that Adoni Bezek is never called a melech, a king. Adoni Bezek was not a king. He was like a nomad sort of type of person. And he was not even considered one of the 31 kings that came out of Eretz Israel. The Torah, the Navi list in Sefer Yoshua, all the kings in Eretz Israel, he was never considered one of them. He was like a lower, I don't know, a low life, but he was a lower type of person than everybody else. And the Ralbag here, okay, this is back to our question about cruel and unusual punishment. Is it okay or not? So the Malbin and the Ralbag here say something very similar, and we'll read them both to see if maybe there's a slight difference between them. So I'll make this a drop bigger. That's what's great about learning over Zoom. Kira'a, says the Malbin, shenich b'sha ha'ir, v'ekotu kach nasan Hashem b'daitam, lasos lo mashalo asuzos, l'shum echad me'oyvehem. The Malbin says this is something that the Jewish people never did to any other of their enemies. Huktsas neged chukei Yisrael. It's a little bit. It's interesting. He doesn't say it's completely usser. He says it's not appropriate. It's a little bit against what we would do. Ki ariga zayin amimim hu besayif. Lo letza'aram al zeha ofen. He says that we have an obligation to kill this the Shiva Amimim. There's a big discussion, and I think Nathan raised this question 2 weeks ago about this doesn't sound appropriate. It sounds barbaric. How can we just kill all the Shiva Amimim? Not even barbaric. It sounds inappropriate. So I pointed out then that Rabbi Sachs, who Shloshim was yesterday, has a great book called Not in God's Name, about religion and the notion of wars. And in that book, he posits the Rambam's opinion. He shares the Rambam's opinion. The Rambam Paskins, you know, when it comes to Shiva Amimim, the first job of the Klal Yisrael was to offer a peace treaty, to offer shalom. If they said no, then they went out to war. So the Malbim says here, there was Hariga. There was no job to cause them suffering or pain, torture them. That's wrong. But here was unique. Sheshilem lo Hashem, mida keneged mida. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was acting through Yehuda and Shimon to permit this because of the cruel way that they acted, that Adoni Bezek acted towards his own, you know, victims. So maybe Horat Shah, it's a time of prophecy. He acted through them, but this is something that we don't do. The Ralbag writes something different. The Ralbag writes like this. V'hine katsu b'honos yidei Adoni Bezek b'honos raglav lahapil. What's the goal of this? To lahapil morach al shar hamalachim. Why did they do this right now? What just happened, says the Ralbag. What just happened? Yehoshua dies. The leader of Klal Yisrael dies. That's when the leader dies and there's a void of leadership, that becomes open season for all the enemies to attack that were waiting. They're waiting for this moment. Yehoshua was an old man. He died at 110 years old. They're waiting for that day when he would die. It would be a sign of weakness. Let's come in. Rabbag says, what do we need to do? The first war. In the first battle, we can't play games. Not only can't we play games, we have to instill fear in our enemies. Lahapil morach al shar hamalachim. Sheyiru hamili lachem b'Yisrael. They had to do this now to instill fear. Right, cause the other nations to shake in their pants. And then he says, and here they did this specifically. This is mida keneged mida over here. But the answer was, and the sign was to everybody else, don't mess with the Jewish people. Just because we lost our leader does not mean we lost our attitude, does not mean we lost our strength. We are still Klal Yisrael, we're still Hashem's nation, and we still have it. Don't come and mess with us. That's the Ralbag's, you know, approach. Very different than the Malbim. Malbim says we never do this. We don't do this. It's not who we are. And here, it was a Shas Etzchak, a Kaddish Baruch Hu sort of intervene. The Ralbag sounds like sometimes this is something that might be appropriate in history. Who determines that? That's a bigger question. Who determines that? But it's to instill fear. It might be okay. Might. I'm saying it is. It's okay. But it might be. Mendy, you had a question?
No, I just said, I used the term send a message. You say sometimes you have to send a message to people.
Yeah. LaMashal, right? They take in their, you know, I'll use your, you know, LA Dodgers. So they hit Mookie Betts, you know, they hit him, they beat him in the head. So the next inning, they're going to take out a relief pitcher and he's going to get the guy off the plate. Is that right? Is that not right? He's going to get probably get kicked out of the game for it. But there's a showmanship or they're sending a message. Again, there's a big difference between a baseball game and, you know, showmanship and real life. But the idea perhaps could be similar. Let's continue now for a little bit. Ve'yilachamu b'nei Yehuda b'Yerushalayim. So after this, b'nei Yehuda attacks Yerushalayim. Ve'yokudu osa ve'yakua lifi charev. Ve'sa'ir shochu ve'esh. So they conquered Yerushalayim. The truth is that Yerushalayim was not fully conquered. Yerushalayim was not fully conquered. We learned this story 2 months ago when we watched a video about Chizkiyahu's tunnels. And we pointed out that in Shmuel Beis, David was planning to build the Beis Hamikdash. He needed first to get Yerushalayim. So Shmuel Beis Parakei, we saw the Yevusim were still living there. So they did this, but it really wasn't complete. V'achar yardu b'nei Yehudi l'achem b'knani Yoshev ahar. What? Oh, 1 second. V'anegav ha'shvela. V'ayelach Yehuda l'knani yoshev ha'chavron v'shem chavron lifnim kiryas arba v'ayaku ha'sheshai v'achiman v'talmai v'ayelach misham el yoshvei devir v'shem devir lifnim kiryat sefer. So here, he got all of these cities. Yerushalayim, Chevron, and now Devir. And now they're going into Kiryat Sefer. Kiryat Sefer. What's interesting about this and what's going to lead us into our next topic in Sefer Shoftim is the following, is that who was given the city of Chevron? Who did Chevron belong to? In Sefer Yoshua, we learn that Chevron belonged to somebody that we all know and love. And that, yeah, you can come. And that is to...
Kalev.
What?
Kalev.
Thank you. He's given to Kalev. If you remember correctly, Kalev is one of the Meraglim. Kalev goes and davens by Kivrei Tzadikim in Chevron, the Kivrei Avos. And he's given, as a gift, he's given Chevron. He's also given Kiryat Sefer. He's given Kiryat Sefer. It seems like the Kiryat Sefer that we know and love today in Eretz Israel is the same Kiryat Sefer as back then. So they help Kalev. Kalev comes from Shevet Yehuda. They overcome Chevron, and then they go into Kiryat Sefer. And Kalev makes a very strange remark. Kalev says the following, Vayomer Kalev. Whoever overcomes or attacks or wins out, you know, captures the city of Kiryat Sefer, I will give them my daughter in marriage. Achsa. I'll give them my daughter in Achsa. So there's one man from Shevet Yehuda who steps up to the plate. That is Osniel ben Kenaz. Vayokada Osniel ben Kenaz, Achi Kalev, Hakaton. He's Osniel Kenaz is Kalev's brother, not literally his full brother, half brother. Mimenu ve'itin lo tz'achze bitoli isha, and he marries his niece. Okay. Vayhi bevoa, lish'ol me'es aviha, hasada v'titznach me'al chamor. Yomar la Kalev Malach, right? So she comes to him, and we'll get into this story next week. What is going on here? She seems not to be maybe so happy. She seems to be disappointed. Kalev said, "What's the matter?" And she wants more than just Kiryat Sefer. So first, we need to ask ourselves: is this appropriate for a father to do? Why was he doing this? Why was this not part of the other lands that Yehuda was taking over? And ultimately, right now, in a very backhanded way, we are meeting our first shofet. Our first shofet in Sefer Shoftim is Otsniel ben Kenaz, who is from Shevet Yehuda. He emerges as the first shofet. And we find his wife. His wife is Achsa. So we'll learn a fascinating and very, very important Gemara in Tmura on next week on Hanukkah to spell out, you know, more of the details. They fill out a lot of the story here as what's going on. And there's some panemius and depth into the city of Kiryat Sefer. What's Kiryat Sefer? It's the city of the book. What does it ultimately represent? And we'll leave that for next week. Wish everybody a great day.